It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. A popular social media campaign has been organizing different forms of consumer protest, including several economic blackout days and extended boycotts of big retailers like Target and Amazon.
Coming up, a Stevens Point bookstore owner says this is a moment for small business owners to step up and take part.
First, we look at what is behind this economic protest and whether boycotts can make a difference.
Stacy Mitchell is co-director of the Institute for Local Self-Reliance, author of the book Big Box Swindle, The True Cost of Mega Retailers and the Fight for America's Independent Businesses. Stacy, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Nice to be with you.
We've got this movement online. Seems like it's getting a lot of attention, encouraging people to shop local, some economic blackout days, boycotts, short or long term of bigger companies, Target, Amazon, for example. As somebody who's been following these kind of big businesses, big retail businesses for quite a while, what do you see in this time of what looks like an upsurge in economic protest?
I think there's a lot of, you know, very widespread outrage about the extraordinary power that a small number of companies, especially big tech companies, have amassed and the ways in which they are, you know, they've been insinuating that power into government, kind of manipulating government, looking to get government favors. And, you know, I think at this moment we are seeing, you know, a lot of response to that with people wanting to protest the power that these companies have.
Now, there's a couple different threads here. Some people concerned about these companies' attachment to the new Trump administration. That coming from the left in some ways or in most ways, how important a part of the story is that?
Well, you know, I think in what we've been seeing, you know, we have, you know, whether it's Elon Musk, who has, you know, spent an extraordinary amount of money to contribute to President Trump's campaign, and who already has nearly $40 billion in government contracts and apparently is in line to be able to increase his contracting through several of his companies with the government. I think that that's something that really strikes people as, you know, fundamentally corrupt and problematic in a supposedly free and democratic country. This kind of relationship that corporations have to government, the fact that we have allowed a very small number of companies to amass a lot of power, the fact that, you know, a lot of legislation that Americans, both conservatives and liberals, support broadly seems to be, you know, unable to pass through Congress and in some cases unable to pass through state legislators because of the power that these companies have lobbying. I mean, I think we've really reached a breaking point with that issue. And this is something that, you know, my organization has been concerned about for a long time, that if you allow too few companies to concentrate too much economic power, they inevitably are able to translate that into political power and that is a huge threat to democracy.
Another concern that people have been worried about since well before the first Trump administration even is the impact of big box stores on local communities, local economies. That's something you've been following for quite a while, including in your book, A Big Box Swindle. Now, of course, concerned about online retailers, Amazon in particular. How important a factor now is worry about those kind of impacts on local economies affecting consumer decisions?
Well, you know, I think that there are people who, you know, if you're someone who lives in a community where you have locally owned businesses, where you have a local grocery store, a pharmacy, a bookstore, a toy store, those businesses are, you know, owned by your neighbors. And there's, you know, we are seeing people decide to shift some or all of their spending to those local businesses as a way to support their local economy, to support the idea of, you know, really shifting economic power back to the community. And there's evidence that having strong local businesses is really good for the health of your economy, but also for your community. It really, you know, it brings people together and kind of supports the civic fabric of the place that you live. And so I think that that kind of decision-making can be really powerful. You know, that said, I think that we have to be clear-eyed about what it is that, you know, boycotts can and cannot achieve. So I think to the extent that you're choosing to support local businesses and making that sort of permanent shift, you're doing something very good for those businesses and for your community, as I said. But I think we should be skeptical about the potential of boycotts to actually have an impact on large companies. And I think the way that we get at their power actually, you know, has to be more about addressing the kind of policy advantages that they have.
How would you do that?
You know, what we have seen across our research for many years is that these big companies are, you know, have become dominant in large part because they have gotten an extraordinary number of government favors, that public policy has really tilted the playing field in their favor. Part of that is that we have, there has been very limited enforcement of our antitrust laws, our anti-monopoly laws for the last few decades. We've begun in the last few years to see an uptick in anti-monopoly enforcement, and that's a really good thing, and I hope will continue. It started under the Biden administration. It's unclear exactly how committed the Trump administration is to it, but I would note that states play an extraordinary role. Like state AGs are, you know, they enforce our federal antitrust laws, and we also have state antitrust laws. And so we've been encouraged to see that a number of states have begun to address these issues. Companies like Amazon, they maintain their market power in part by using anti-competitive practices. And so we've seen now a federal lawsuit that's been filed by the Federal Trade Commission together with 17 states, including Wisconsin, that accuses Amazon of monopolizing the market and attempts to go after those anti-competitive practices. I'm hopeful that that lawsuit will succeed, that we'll see a breakup of Amazon, and that that will open up a lot of new opportunity for businesses to compete, and in the process really reduce Amazon's political power.
One concern from consumers, and of course these companies themselves, one argument might be they're successful because they're big, they're efficient, they have economies of scale. Ultimately, they can deliver products to consumers at lower prices, in some cases at more convenience. That's what consumers want. What would you say to somebody making that argument?
I think when you take a closer look at many of these sectors, you see, in fact, that the opposite is true. For example, we can look at a company like Walmart, which is known for its low prices. What we've seen in reporting and research is that Walmart actually goes to suppliers and says, "You're going to give us your best. You're going to give us these deep discounts, and you're going to charge our competitor down the street a higher price." And of course, Walmart is so dominant in that relationship that the supplier's like, "Look, you're my biggest customer. I can't say no. I have to give you this special discount. And I have to, in effect, end up raising my prices to your competitors." Well, that tilts the playing field. And that means that consumers who would prefer to shop at a local grocery store, or who maybe, you know, have only a local grocery store as an option, are in fact paying more because of Walmart's market power than they would if we actually enforced fair competition laws.
You mentioned earlier boycotts not as effective as potential enforcement of antitrust laws. Do you see any value in short, long-term economic protests and boycotts?
Well, I mean, I think it can be an initial way to organize people. Certainly, it's a straightforward kind of entry point for people to get involved. But I think it's worth really thinking about the limits of boycotts. There's not a lot of evidence that they're effective unless they can really be sustained and they're very targeted to a very limited thing. But sort of boycotts that are kind of widespread and sort of target a lot of companies and are temporary are unlikely really to achieve much. One of the reasons for that is simply that it's very hard, especially with these global companies, to assemble sort of enough consumers to take part. I would also note that about 50% of all retail spending in this country, all consumer spending, excuse me, is done by the top 10% wealthiest households. Those are often the same households that are benefiting from corporate consolidation. So they don't necessarily really have an incentive to join in. So the bottom 90% is already facing an uphill battle in terms of using their dollars to try to influence what's happening. We are far more powerful when we use our citizenship muscle to try to influence what's happening. And so what I really hope to see is that some of the organizing around these boycotts will use that as a jumping off point to actually organize and begin to engage around some of these ways in which policy at the local, state, and hopefully eventually at the federal level can take on these issues of outsized corporate power.
On those lines, you've argued elsewhere that people should think of themselves first and foremost as citizens rather than as consumers when thinking about these issues. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, I mean, I think we've been, you know, sort of trained in this country for the last several decades to really just think of ourselves primarily as consumers. We're out in the world. I mean, even our elected officials often refer to us that way. They talk about, you know, the American consumer. But as citizens, we're far more powerful. You know, our ability to come together and elect people, you know, work together with our neighbors to change laws is far more threatening to corporations. As a consumer, you have a choice of what is available. And in the case of monopolies, I mean, the reality is that there are a lot of Americans who really don't have a feasible option about where to buy groceries except for Walmart, or in some cases, Dollar General. That's literally their only choice. I mean, that's kind of what a monopoly is that it's a limitation on choice. And so trying to affect change that way, it doesn't get us very far when in fact it is the underlying policies and structures that create our economy, that create what's available to us, that is the place to really make change. And, you know, it's no coincidence that corporations have tried very hard they talk to us as consumers to try to position us always as consumers, because they know as consumers we're sort of weak. And what they're really afraid of is that if we take seriously our ability to affect change as citizens working collectively with our neighbors, that's the real threat to their power. And they would prefer that we not pay attention to it.
Stacy, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
That was Stacy Mitchell, co-director of the Institute for Local Self-Reliance and author of Big Box Swindle, The True Cost of Mega Retailers and the Fight for America's Independent Businesses. Now we head to Stevens Point, where a local bookstore is encouraging the community to buy local. Lynn Churro is an owner and manager of Bound to Happen Books in Stevens Point. Lynn, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Thanks so much for having me, Rob.
Well, first, Lynn, can you tell us about Bound to Happen Books and the role you see it playing in your community in Stevens Point?
Yeah, we opened back in 2021, so we're coming up on 4 years here. And we always started with the intention of providing a community space and making sure that we really highlighted and emphasized the stories, authors, and experiences that aren't well represented either in our region as well as mainstream literature. Yeah, I'd say at this point, we're definitely seen as the place within Stevens Point to come if you want to experience something that you might not find elsewhere, as well as connect with people that we feel is like just so important, especially in this new era we find ourselves in.
Well, 2021, you're starting with some obstacles right off the bat, coming out of COVID, opening a small business in a industry that's dominated by a company we'll talk more about, Amazon. Did you feel like it was a bold move to make that call in 2021?
Honestly, what I've seen looking at book industry data and just from my own experience during this time of extreme isolation and when people had to quarantine themselves, people were trying to find ways to like reignite their communities and to make these connections again. And bookstores were the place that people flocked to. So honestly, it was kind of a renaissance for independent bookstores. And we kind of opened what I would think is a great time. It was definitely a great time for tons of indie bookstores that have opened.
Is that something you hear from customers? Like, yeah, I know I could have probably bought this online, but there's something about the experience of interacting with humans and seeing books on a shelf together?
Oh, yes. Yep. And that's something that we talk about a lot as well. Like you can buy stuff while you're sitting on your couch or whatever, but you're basically just talking to an algorithm. But when you come into our bookstore, really any indie bookstore, you have a face there, you have somebody you can connect with, you have other customers, other people within the store that oftentimes will also recommend books to other people. And yeah, it's something that we hear a lot. People are really excited and really happy to find themselves in a place where they can find that real human connection.
And then you've been publicly active there, and on your social media profiles, for example, you encourage people to participate in a recent economic blackout day, quote, even if it includes us, end quote. Why did you want to share that message with people about taking this economic blackout action?
Yeah, I see a really important like nugget within this economic blackout action of people wanting to find some way to fight back against this seemingly insurmountable situation we find ourselves in. Whether it's fighting back against the way that big box stores and behemoths like Amazon are kind of eating up all aspects of our lives, or if it was to push back against the attacks that different marginalized communities are facing. I feel like this economic blackout was a real kind of, it encompassed all of this and more. And as a small business owner, as a political activist myself, I felt really important to not only endorse this and to highlight and to bring it to more people, it also felt important to point out that while doing this for one day is an incredible thing, it needs to go beyond that. It needs to look at the entire system we find ourselves in under capitalism, and we need to use it to inspire us to fight back and organize and struggle and build something bigger rather than just some individual actions.
Thinking about my experiences in point, there's a variety of perspectives there. Some people would be nodding along to everything you just said. Some people would be, what the heck are you talking about? We shop. It's not a political action when we buy stuff. How do you explain this kind of activism to people in that second category, to people who might not already be embracing that message?
I think that, those people that might fall into that category actually do understand that and do think about it just in a different way. What we try to do with the bookstore is to find the points of commonality, find the points of solidarity, and build from there. And so for these people who, might feel like this action is worthless, is silly, isn't going to do anything, I would talk to them about the local businesses, the independent stores that they go to and they support, and show that with the way that Amazon and other stores and other businesses try to monopolize and take over everything, like that is going to affect them just as much as it affects anybody else within our community. And if we can band together, if we can find those points of commonality, we can actually try to do something productive with the world.
And as we wrap up, what are you hoping to be involved in as more economic protests unfold over the coming weeks and months?
Yeah, I see our bookstore, and really any independent bookstore, any independent store, should really see themselves as needing to support these fights, as not just trying to find ways to like weather the storm, not just try to find ways to take advantage of what's going on, but to really put their resources where their mouths are. Local businesses, independent stores need to realize that they are just as much of a target as anyone else is right now. And if they want to survive, if they want to see their community thrive, then they need to get involved and they need to do it quick.
Lynn, we'll leave it there. Thanks a lot for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you, Rob. I appreciate it.
That's Lynn Churro, owner and manager of Bound to Happen Books in Stevens Point. Earlier, we heard from Stacey Mitchell, co-director of the Institute for Local Self-Reliance. Been talking about a recent wave of economic protests and why some communities are embracing a call to shop local.